We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Oh, the WNBC's is here! Let's do it! It's tonight, the Friday. You may be listening to this later. It doesn't matter. The WNBA season is started by the time you listen to this podcast. I'm Gabe Ibrahim. That is Calvin Wetzel. Welcome to the Her Hoop Stats podcast, where we are going to be breaking down our most intriguing players this year, or at least some of our most intriguing players, or a list of intriguing players. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But we're just really excited to be here for the start of the WNBA season. And we have a very exciting announcement. We have a new betting platform. We're not really sure what the exact word is, but there's a new betting wing of Her Hoop Stats. It's called Spread the Floor. You may remember last year we did some Spread the Floor shows at the end of the WNBA season. Calvin's been giving you picks all year and he's been kicking butt on those. So you got to listen to Calvin, but this is going to be your source for women's basketball picks and information. There's a new Twitter. It's @spread_the_floor. So only one underscore, not two underscores. And then you'll be able to find a new YouTube channel and you'll be seeing a lot more of it. So don't worry about it. But Calvin, let me know what you're like. What are you excited to make these picks? Are you feeling pressure? What's up?
All of the above. You know what I'm most excited for though? You, Dano, the rest of the team, we're all going to be making picks now. It's not just going to be me. It's going to be a whole team. They're all going to be there. You'll be able to see which one of us made the pick. So if you want to bet on everyone else and fade Gabe, you can do that.
Or it's probably a good move.
That's what I'm the most pumped about.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to get a little competition going too. I mean, because I feel like the percentage of people who are gonna like say like the picks are just based on a feeling, like I'm definitely gonna lead in that category. Like, hey, I got a feeling today, Mystics minus whatever. So I think it'll be really fun and we're excited to do that. But we're gonna save that stuff when Dano joins us after this podcast, or that'll be on the Spread the Floor YouTube channel. This will be on the Her Hoop Stats normal YouTube channel, because this is a Her Hoop Stats podcast. So make sure you subscribe here. Make sure you subscribe there. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter names will be under us for the duration here, because I've changed up the way we do things around here. But Calvin, let's get it started. Do you want to take your... Actually, no, yeah, you're the guest here. Let's toss you a ball. Let's give you an ISO possession really quick. Give me your first most intriguing player that you'd like to talk about. Actually, how'd you define intriguing? I'm excited. I'm interested in that too.
That's good. Well, I define it differently for different ones of these players. Sure. So it's really tough. When we were texting about this for our listeners, Gabe told me intriguing is in the eye of the beholder. So we probably both defined it differently as well.
Yeah, we did.
I defined it for basically players that I am very interested to see how they do this year, because I think they could do either a lot better or a lot worse than they did last year, or I just have no clue. They have a wide range of possibilities. I'm going to start out in alphabetical order. Just going to go with Ariel Atkins.
Oh, me. I have her too. Damn.
All right. Awesome.
Cool. Well, go ahead.
I'm glad you let me go first then. So I didn't steal it from you. It was the other way around. But
yeah,
I look at Ariel Atkins. Obviously, she got a lot of valuable experience the last year or two in terms of usage without Elena Deladon being on the court too much. She's still only 25. I mean, she's mm-hmm. a at the beginning of her prime, probably still ascending. She, you know, no Tina Charles now. They do have Elena Deladon back, but we know she's going to have some load management. I mean, she's not going to play in their second game. She's not going to travel with the team, at least at the beginning. And Alicia Clark will be back at some point, not back yet as well. So Ariel Atkins, at least for times this season, is really going to be the alpha dog. He's going to be carrying the load. You know, that's not going to be the case in every game. But I think we could even see, we saw a step up from her last year. She's been ascending every year. I think we could see another big step up this year. And I'm excited, too, to see how, you know, I don't know that much about Rui, to be honest, but yeah. I'm excited to see how she looks on the court. And I think these two could be, you know, a pair that plays really well together.
So I think I had the same thought with the Mystics. Yeah, I was like toying, like, oh, do I go Ariel? Do I go Rui? I think both of them are super intriguing, super interesting. The reason I went with Ariel, though, is because I think intriguing has like an element of like impact. Like, I think Ariel Atkins, depending on how she develops a little bit more, because I agree with what you're saying. She's had these last 2 years, but it's been super, it's been kind of up and down, even though it's been good. Like, her 2020 was statistically awesome. And 2021, similarly good, a little bit of a step back, but similarly good. So her development's been a little bit uneven. Like, it's been games where it's like, oh, she is like there. She's already where she needs to be. And then there's times where it kind of took a step back. And there, you know, there's times where I was like, hey, if she just did X, Y, or Z, it'd be perfect. And I think the X, Y, or Z that I kept coming back to, the one that was consistently something that she could work on, was getting to the rim. And she's talked a lot about this so far in the offseason. So is Mike Tebow. So is the whole team, really. That if she can get more downhill, instead of like, she kind of fades into, you know, I'm talking about like the mid-rangers where she's kind of like off balance fading, and she makes them at a decent enough clip. That's not a bad shot. But if she can get down to the rim more, I think it'd be huge. So only 26% of her shots were in the paint last year, and only 7% of her total shots were in the restricted area. And then even when she got there, she was not shooting that well. So 64.5% in the restricted area, 41.7% from the paint. It wasn't that great. So I need her, if she can get to the rim and finish more, I think she does take that next step. And maybe she's even a superstar, because I think a lot of people saw her destiny as a 3-and-D before that 2020 season, when she really needed to step up. I think she can be a full offensive engine as this team goes forward. So this will be kind of the year that I hope we see the makings of that superstar.
Yeah, I love that you brought up all those stats, because you clearly prepared more for this podcast than I did, because I had no stats for Ariel Atkins. But yeah, 7% at the rim feels like it's just not going to cut it for that prototype of player. If you're going to be that alpha scorer, or even that, you know, number two to Elena Deladon when she's healthy, and you're not a three level scorer if you're not scoring at the rim. That's one of the levels. So yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so she, and it also, it just opens up everything, right? Like, as soon as she gets down there, there's going to be passing opportunities, especially if, when this team is fully healthy, there's shooters all around there. And then there's everyone that can get downhill. You have Cloud, you have Hines Allen. We'll see how healthy Elena Deladon is. We'll see how healthy Alicia Clark is. But in an ideal world, if everything goes well, it'll be five out. Everyone can get to the rim and finish. I think Ariel's going to be really pushing that. So yeah, I'm glad you picked her too. Because I feel like she... I don't think she gets overlooked, but she doesn't get talked about as much just because she's kind of more quiet, especially with the way the seasons have gone for the Mystics since the championship. I think she hasn't quite gotten enough credit for the development that she's had.
No, I agree. I think this might be the year where she finally starts getting talked about in that way.
Yeah, yeah. And shouts to Rui, though. Have you seen any Rui highlights?
I've seen a couple. Yeah, not enough. I'm excited to see a lot more tonight, but.
I'm excited. She, like, I think she's gonna have a trap. If I had to pick, I wish this was a prop bet. If I had a prop bet, I'd say she's gonna have one travel today. Just because, like,
0.5 travels, or are you going under 1.5? Over 0.5.
Over 0.5. I think she'll have one, because there's just like times where, so she's brilliant. She's like a brilliant basketball player, but she sees things like ahead of her teammates, and she can't communicate with them. Because she doesn't speak English. So it's like, yeah. She's like, oh, go there. And then, like, you know, my Cheyenne's Island has no idea what she wanted her to do. So it's like, oh, travel. So it happens sometimes. But I'm excited for Rui. I'm excited for Ariel. I hope this team is healthy, just for the love of God. The love of God. Please make the Mystics healthy. Please.
Definitely.
Do you want to go on to our next one? Or do you have anything else in the Mystics?
No, let's go on. You take the next one.
All right. My next one is Dawana Bonner. In Connecticut. I had a couple of choices on Connecticut. I just think Connecticut's fascinating. They're the first. This is the first time we're going to see Bonner with the full strength Sun for the entire season. Obviously, we saw that team together for four games last year, four games where they lost to the Chicago Sky in the semifinals. So things did not go great in that very small sample size. This team should fit together, but I think someone's going to have to change. Someone needs to sacrifice because you have Alyssa Thomas, you have Jonquel Jones, and you have Dawana Bonner. You could say, hey, Jasmine Thomas, Brianna Jones, you two sacrifice, but they don't really have high usage to begin with. So that's not where you're getting it from. Bonner's usage in Connecticut both seasons has been very high. I mean, it was 27.3% in 2020, 23.9% in 2021. Her shooting dipped a little bit last year, but went up from three. So it's just like, you know, we've seen her be a perfect option when she, a perfect third option in Phoenix with Griner and with Taurasi, which was great. But can she be that player in an efficient role again? Does she want to be that player in an efficient role again? Like, where does she see herself in the hierarchy of this team? Is that going to, how is Kirk going to manage all that? And then you have Courtney Williams coming off the bench. And it's like, well, a lot of Bonner's production in the past couple of years have been running with bench units and keeping those units afloat offensively. So now you're kind of taking that a little bit away from her too. So it's like, how do you get her enough touches so that she is being productive, and can she be more efficient so that she doesn't need as many touches? So that's why I think Bonner is really, really interesting. I think she'll have a huge part to play in the title race this year.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong. She was the third option on that Mercury championship team. Yes. A while back, right?
Yes.
She was obviously, that was a lot earlier in her career, but yeah, that's a really good point. And yeah, Courtney Williams, as long as you bring her up, I'm just going to go to one of my next ones. Courtney Williams.
Okay. I'm glad I didn't pick her, because that was the one I had on my top of my list. So yeah.
I feel like that was a great segue. So let's do it. I mean, first off, I share initials and a birthday with Courtney Williams. So I love Courtney Williams. Yeah. Second off, I just picked her on my fantasy team last year because she told everyone to. I forget who tweeted, one of the reporters, sorry, I'm not giving you credit, talked to Courtney Williams, asked her about fantasy. She said, I have no clue anything about fantasy, but you all should pick me. So I did. You're welcome, Courtney. But also, I just think, I mean, she was a really big part of that 2019 almost championship team. They were, what were they, like tied with 5 minutes left in game 5 with the Mystics? They were close.
Yep.
And she was a huge part of that. She's a bucket. And when you look at this team, I mean, yeah, maybe she's going to be coming off the bench, you know, whatever. But that starting lineup that they had that year, they have the whole thing except for Shakina Strickland, but they also have Dawana Bonner. So it's, I mean, that's an upgrade, obviously. To me, this team is at least as good, probably better than that team that was minutes away from winning the championship. And Courtney Williams is a big reason why, bringing her off the bench. I feel like if we look at this team the last couple of years, maybe against the Sky even in that series, some of the things that Courtney Williams brings almost feel like maybe what was the missing piece that maybe could have put them over the top. That energy and that swag and that just ability, whether it's off the bench or just at the guard spot rather than, you know, a big, to just give the ball and go get a bucket. And so I think I love that the Sun brought her back. I think this is where she belongs. And to me, I know we're not making where this is all about intriguing players, but my championship pick is the Sun, and that's a big reason why.
I like that. I think so. Two things. So one thing you brought up that I was just supposed to think about, I was like, so Shakina Strickland, obviously changing Shakina Strickland for Dawana Bonner, is a step up in talent. That's a hell of a fit when you had Strickland there at the 3-4. You know, it depends on what was happening, but you know, when she was playing the 3 there, and you have Williams at the 2, and then it made a lot of sense. The reason why I think that 2019 Sun team made it to the championship is because they fit so well. It wasn't necessarily just because of their talent level. It was because they fit perfectly all together. And this team, that's why I say Dawana Bonner there and Courtney Williams is in the same category. Is like, does it all fit now again? Can they make that fit work? Because Dawana Bonner ain't standing in the corner waiting for threes. That's not her game. You know who else ain't doing that? Courtney Williams is not waiting on the 3-point line to get threes. She'll wait to get the ball, and then she'll do whatever she wants with it. So now, okay, is Jonquel Jones going to kind of like, who's the spacer? Jonquel could be a spacer. Do you want her to be a spacer? I mean, Alyssa Thomas is not going to shoot. That's not happening. Alyssa Thomas is going to do exactly what she does. There's little intrigue. She's going to do exactly what she does. So it's how do those players fit around her? Also, while we're here, is there any chance this year that Nia Claudin takes a little bit of Courtney Williams' minutes? Because I think, you know, you want to know someone who can stand on the three-point line and shoot threes? Nia Claudin. She's a rookie. You could tell her whatever you want. She had three threes, I think, in their preseason game. Obviously, this is coming from the captain of the Nia Claudin fan base.
This is why I'm laughing if our listeners go, no, because Gabe Ibrahim is the president of the Nia Claudin fan club. And I love that we got however long into this podcast.
14 minutes.
14 minutes.
It was funny. I think Nia's mom or someone wished me a happy birthday on YouTube the other day. So thank you guys. I love you guys. I'm glad you guys like me too. As the president of the club, I'm like, okay, well, if things don't go well with Courtney, do they just turn to Nia as that backup guard? Because she's not as tall, and she's obviously not as experienced, and she's not quite gonna be there in terms of getting a bucket like Courtney is, but she can stand on the 3-point line, she can space. So is there an opportunity for her to kind of play with those starters when they need that spacing? And then who's going to adjust as well, like I mentioned? So I'm with you. I think this is a fascinating team. So you got Connecticut winning the championship?
I do. And you know what? I think you're right, though, that the pieces may not fit quite as perfectly as they did in 2019. I think, though, obviously, to me, I mean, you have a little bit more talent than you had in that team, number one. Unlike last year, you have the time to – sort of figure it out and make the pieces fit, because last year they kind of threw Alyssa Thomas in at the end, you know, to a team that had already gelled all year, and all of a sudden it kind of threw everything off, where this year they're all there from the start, right? And when I look at this team compared to the 2019 team, I think it's a little bit deeper because of people like Nia Claudin, number one, because some of those absences, you know, Alyssa Thomas last year, Jonquil Jones the year before that, allowed Breonna Jones and players like that to get more experience. And so now they have that depth added as well. So, I mean, Kurt Miller loves to ride the starters. We know that. You know, it's not like they're going to go 11 deep or whatever. But I do think that this team is at least going to get a little bit more production from the bench than the 2019 team, or really, I think, probably any of the last three Connecticut Sun teams will. And I think that's going to be big, you know, all season long. So, to me, there's some, when I look at the 2019 team compared to this team, like, this team has some advantages that outweigh the puzzle pieces, if you will, that I think are going to put this team over the top. And the other advantage is that this team probably isn't playing in the same season as the best offense in league history, like that team was.
Well, we don't know that yet.
Maybe I'm wrong. We don't know, but I'm not sure if I see it.
I don't see it. Yes. Currently, if we had to pick, I would say no one's going to be quite as good on offense as those Mystics were. I think that's a really good point about their depth. I just wonder, like, they may just be a little bit worse in the regular season, just because I hope they're not worse. That's not what I meant to say. I hope they experiment a little bit more, and I hope they do take the time to rest a little bit more in the regular season, because this team's playoff. They don't need to prove anything. They don't need the first, like, forget the disrespect thing. Like, just forget the first number one seed. Like, you don't need that. What you need to do is be ready and healthy and together in the playoffs and have it all figured out perfectly. So hopefully they kind of take that time to experiment, to rest in the regular season, whereas they haven't done it in the last few seasons. And hopefully they stay healthy, because it's going to be really fun.
Yeah, this is a great year to start doing that too, because with the new playoff format, the one and the two seed aren't a big deal. In the last few years, once you get the one seed locked up, you should rest. But you really, really shouldn't be coasting if you're on the border of the 2-3 line and the way the old playoff format was, because that double bye is massive. The way the new playoff format is, who cares if you got from 2-3? It's like the same thing. Yeah. So if they're right there, I mean, yeah, chill out in the last month. Who cares? Just get into the playoffs and then go to work.
Yeah, I wonder how important home court advantage will be, though, in the playoffs too, because I don't know. I feel like there is a big I think there's a big emphasis on not traveling in the playoffs. I feel like you'd rather have that, but I don't know. I don't know if you're going to kill yourself over it.
Yeah. Well, this is a little tangent, but while we're on this, cannot wait to see the first team this year, because it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen. The first team this year who is the worst seed but still gets to host a single elimination game because of the way they set up the first round. Do you remember how they did that? So the first round is three games, and the better seeds.
The one seed
hosts the first two, and if they split, the 8 seed would host game 3. And I don't know if it's going to happen in the 1 versus 8, but it's going to happen somewhere. Maybe the 3 versus 6. I don't know. One of those worst seeds is going to host a single elimination game.
Oh God!
And I can't wait to see that.
People are going to be so mad. It's going to be
mad for them, but it'll be, as a neutral fan, it'll be exciting.
The thing is with the three game series though, like, how else are you going to do it?
Yeah, I mean, you could travel twice, I guess. But obviously they don't want to do that. The other thing, I don't know. Well, all right, let me ask you this. If you don't want to travel twice, that means the worst seed has to host game 1 or game 3.
Yes.
Or technically you could just give the better seed home for all 3 games, I guess. Which one would you think? Or let's say if you're the better seed, if you got to choose, would you rather go on the road for game 1 or game 3 in the 3 game series?
All right, if I'm the team or if I'm the organization? Because the organization makes the choice. And the reason why this is happening is because the team wants 2 guaranteed games of ticket revenue. In my estimation, that's why if I was an owner, I would say, hey, we're not doing, you got to give us the 2 games because we get gate receipts on those 2 games. So, like, if I'm the organization, I'm saying, absolutely not. We have those 2 games. Whatever. If we get to game 3, if we're that much better, we're going to win. But I think if I'm the team and I care mostly about winning, I think I'd still rather have this. If I can't travel twice, so we can't travel to game 2. And I don't think I would, as the team, I don't think I would rather travel to game 2 because then that's 2 days. Like, the traveling twice thing in the WNBA is really tough. So, yeah, I think this is the best way to do it because it's like, well, if we're that good, we can beat that team twice in a row, right? And then we're okay. If we're not that good, then we got to win one on the road. So yeah, I think I'd rather have the game 3 be our road game.
That's a good point. So when I just brought up the whole idea of playing all 3 games at home if you have to, I had never said that out loud before. And I just heard myself say it, and I just realized, why aren't we doing that? Because you took away some advantages from the top teams by taking away their buys when you move to this format. So why don't we at least compensate a little bit and give them some advantage back by just giving them all 3 games at home in the first round? Then you don't have any travel at all. And if you're the 8 seed, like, you can complain like, oh, we don't get to play at home. But also, like, you're the 8 seed out of 12. You're under 500. Kind of generous to let you in the playoffs, to be honest. Like, what other league?
You're lucky to be here.
Seriously, though, what other league lets 2/3 of their teams into the playoffs? Like, not even the NBA does that. It's over half. But, like, I guess it's different for the 4 versus 5. But I don't know. That, to me, honestly, now that I am first thinking about it, that seems like a viable option for the first round, not for, like, the finals or whatever. Both teams got to host once you get deep. But in the first round, why not play them all at one site?
So, I think it's for the 8 seed. I'm with you, whatever. You shouldn't, like, realistically, like, you're just here. The 5 seed, though, like, I would have a big problem with that if I'm the 5 seed, right? Because, like, well, we did pretty good this season. Like, we're pretty middle of the pack. Like, you know, we're going to, because it goes 1, 8, 2. Am I getting this right? 1, 8, 2, 7, 3, 6, 4, 5. Right.
Yep.
So the 4, 5, like, I think it's getting a little messed up to say, hey, 5 seed, you gotta win 2 or 3 games on the road. And then also from the ownership perspective, the people actually making these decisions, like, I want 1 potential game of gate receipts if we make it there, especially if it's the elimination one. Like, that's gonna be a big game for us. So I think those would be the problems with it. It's just like it punishes too much the 5 and 6 seeds in that first round, because I think they do deserve a chance. You know, if we're saying the home court advantage means a lot, then they deserve a chance to win if they get a split in those first 2 games.
That's a good point. Maybe we just need 5 or 7 game series all the way through.
5 game series are perfect. I wish the NBA would go back to that in the first round, because there's a lot more, like, randomness involved. But I think a 5 game series is perfect, because we're going 3 in the first round, then 5 the rest of the way.
I think that's correct. Yeah. So if we just went 5 in the first round, I think that would solve this whole problem that we are talking about. Just do 2-2-1, right?
Yeah, just do 2-2-1.
Yeah.
So I think that's I understand why I did it like that, but I do kind of feel bad for the one seed who, hey, we don't have X, Y, or Z player in game one. Now we gotta go win a game three on the road.
Yeah, that's gonna happen, and everyone Twitter is gonna be on fire about it. And I'm kind of excited to sit back and
I'm excited for that too. That's our tangent on the playoff discussion. I'm sure we'll have that again and again and again and again many, many times here on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. Maybe not on Spread the Floor. I don't know. We'll figure out what we're going to talk about on Spread the Floor. Do you want to go to your – so you just – we did Courtney Williams. We did – we both had Ariel Atkins. Then we did the Connecticut Sun duo that we both pretty much had. So who – give me a third one.
All right. So I have talked about this one on like three different places already. So if anyone's been reading and watching my stuff, you're just sorry. You're probably gonna be bored of repeating myself. But I am big on Steph Dolson this year. Maybe a little bit of Sky bias talking. I think she's gonna fit in great with the Liberty. She's obviously one of, if not the best screener in the league, which was a big deal when you played with Courtney Vandersloot. And all those pick and rolls. And I think it's going to be a big deal when she plays with Sabrina Ionescu and all those pick and rolls. I think Sabrina could take that next step and have similar success playing with Steph Dolson. Of course, she can pick and pop. She can hit the three. I think she's underrated. Like we talk about, I think, what is she, 29, 30? She's in her prime.
Yep.
She has championship. She's a two-time All-Star. Obviously, she won with the Sky. She also has championship experience at the EuroLeague level. At the college level, I think what she brings just in terms of intangibles and in terms of on the court is really, really valuable. I don't know if we talk about it enough. And I think it's a huge, I mean, there was all this discussion over the offseason, like, oh, the Liberty, maybe they're going to go sign Breanna Stewart or whatever. Maybe they're going to bring in these like huge splashy names, and they didn't, right? But to me, the one that they did bring in is kind of a big deal still. It's obviously not Breanna Stewart, it's nowhere close. But it's still something that is going to help them take that next step, I think. Last year, they were kind of a, no disrespect, but a pseudo playoff team.
Yeah.
They were the 8 seed. They were I think if I remember correctly, they were the worst winning percentage to ever get in the playoffs in the league history. Is that right?
I believe they were. Okay. Yes.
This year, I think they're going to be a legitimate playoff team, a playoff team that does not break records for the worst playoff team ever. To be fair to them, though, they almost won a playoff game. They played really well in that playoff game. So anything can happen in single elimination. That's why they got rid of it. But to me, the Liberty are going to take that next step this year and, be, I don't know what they'll be, 5, 6, 7, but middle of the pack, around 500. I don't know what they were last year, 12 and 20, something like that.
Yeah,
something I think like Steph Dolson's going to help them take that next step.
I am with you on Steph Dolson. I'm Steph Dolson. I had to be an apologist for a while because I was working with someone who really did not like Steph Dolson. But purple hair Steph Dolson at Washington was awesome. Steph Dolson with non-purple streaks in her hair in Chicago was awesome. One of the best screeners in the league, are you saying? I'm with you. I think she fits perfectly into what New York needs, both, you know, from that pick and roll perspective, but also just from a connector perspective. Like, they didn't have a center who really like understood how to move the ball, and that's no shade to their centers. It just like, the centers that they had didn't work out there. And I don't think Natasha Howard is best as a center, especially if what she wants to do with her career. And I think what kind of they want to see from her, I think she's probably best at the four. So I think, you know, Dolson setting screens, not only for Sabrina is huge, but just with all the ball handlers, because it'll pretty much be Dolson and then four ball handlers with Laney, with Whitcomb, with Howard, and just being able to connect those players and to make the movements work and to bail them out. With like flashes to the 3-point line when Sabrina gets caught at the nail, right? Like those are kind of things, that little things that are going to be really huge for what she's doing for them. I think also they needed her to just kind of, you know, prevent people from killing them in the post. Cause it happened a lot last year, and she's big enough. She's not the best center defender in the league, but she is certainly capable and better than what they had at center. So I think I'm with you. I think she's going to be really intriguing. Do you think this team's going to be better this year? I think they could be. I'm just a little, I think last year I had the same problem. It's like, well, who are they going to jump? I don't know if they get much higher in the hierarchy here in the WNBA.
That's a good point. Cause some of the teams right ahead of them got better, or at least didn't get worse. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, let's see. So the Wings were seventh. I could see them jumping the Wings, to be honest. I mean, yeah. The Wings, in theory, are getting better because they're all young. They're all like 22, and 22-year-olds should always be getting better. But from a roster perspective, did the Wings get really better?
No. Sure. Well, we'll save the Wings for a sec. I got the Wings. Don't worry.
All right. We'll come back to that. I think the Wings improvement has to come from young people talent improving. I don't know if it came from the roster improvement. I could also just see the league being more close together. I don't know, a little bit more parity this year. The Sun were like so dominant last year. And then you had your teams at the bottom, like the Fever for a while. The Fever kind of, and you know, had a mediocre stretch, but for most of the year they were just bad. Yes. And I could see everyone being a little bit close together to the point where the 8 seed this year, even if the Liberty stay in 8, their record is a lot better than what they were last year. You know what I mean?
Yes. No, I think that too. The other problem I had was like, was Los Angeles going to be better? They got the roster got better. I'm not sure if they're.
I'm not very high on that.
I'm very skeptical. I have another player on my list. If we have time, we may talk about it. Kennedy Carter. But like, you know, just a little skeptical there. I'm skeptical. I think with Dallas too, same thing. I think Dallas though, like, right, you're right. Like 22-year-old should get better. So they should get better. So I'm not sure they're going to jump there. Maybe Phoenix takes a step back. Maybe Minnesota takes a step back. If they suffer some more injuries, I mean, their injury report today, as we'll talk about and spread the floor, is rough to say the least. So, and then Washington too, it's like, well, Washington, if Elena Deldon's not healthy, if Felicia Clark's not ready, well, like those are the teams they could jump. I just don't know if they will do it, because I thought they could do that last year and they kind of didn't. Outside of Washington, they did jump Washington. So I'm excited about New York. I had Sammy Whitcomb on my list just because she's kind of the backup point guard at the moment. AD is on the roster. I'm not sure how ready they are to contribute right now, considering 2 years off with COVID. And you know, we hope AD's doing great. It's great to see them on the roster, but I'm not sure they are ready to contribute at that level. So really, Sammy Whitcomb's going to be the backup point guard, and she was Sandy Rondella's point guard in Australia. So I think it's super interesting to think of Sammy Whitcomb point guard rather than Sammy Whitcomb three-point specialist. That's a really intriguing possibility, but I'm with you. I think Steph Dolson's probably the most intriguing player there in New York. Very, very fascinating team. I'll take the Amtrak up there a couple times to check him out.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up AD too real quick, because I think, that could be a reason why I think New York jumps, because I don't think any of us are expecting any, you know, significant contributions out of someone who hasn't played basketball in 2 years, but they obviously are very, very good at basketball.
Oh yeah.
And if they can even get, you know, a fraction of that talent back, I mean, that's just something that the New York could have above and beyond what anyone really is giving them credit for coming into the season. If you get even, you know, half of what we expected out of AD when she came out of college, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. And then when, you also got, yeah, you're a weird team, man. Like Kanju is here. Lorella Kubai is here. Like a lot of players who can get really good and contribute or may not be anything, right? Like there's lots of question marks, but lots of upside in New York, which we've been saying for years. We've been saying it for years. I hope it turns around at some point, or they get Brianna Stewart next year, so we don't have to talk about their potential anymore. All right, let's go Dallas. So as I mentioned, Dallas is on my list because of Satu Sabally. I think she is intriguing, and she's not here, I believe, right? She's still in Fenerbahce.
I believe that is correct.
Believe so. Although they don't play today, do they? So they're not. I don't have their injury report yet. Regardless, I think Satu's super interesting because if she is healthy, this playoff race at that, you know, basically from that 5 to 8 range changes completely. Satu Sabally healthy makes the Dallas Wings into a competitor for those spots, because European Sabally has been enthralling, amazing, exhilarating. WNBA Sobley has only shown flashes, but it's really due to the injuries, right? Only 16 games in 2020, 17 games in 2021. If she's kind of the superstar that we thought she would be when they picked her, then this team is cooking with gas. I mean, I think this team is ready to start contending for a playoff spot now with Arike, and then they kind of can, you know, say, okay, hey, we're building around these two for sure. These are our two for sures. Whereas I think they only really have a one for sure right now in Arike Ogunbowale in terms of franchise cornerstones. So if she is healthy, then I think Dallas is a pretty good squad. I think they can compete with those other teams that we were mentioning in New York, the Minnesota, the Phoenix, the Washington. But it's only if Sobley is healthy and only if Sobley has developed to the point where she can be that star player that we all envision.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, she was an all-star last year, right? She snuck in because most of her health came in, you know, earlier in mm-hmm. the season. But so obviously she's capable of play. Her ceiling is definitely at least at that level. And if she gets to that level, you're right. The Wings are cooking with gas because once you have those two franchise mm-hmm. cornerstones, now you can start thinking about how do we build our roster to add, you know, whether it's go out and get a free agent or whatever you need to do to add that one more piece to put yourself into that top tier, that top four. You're at that point, you're really only one piece away once you have those two pieces. And the Wings have kind of been in that middle tier for a couple of years, sneaking up from that bottom tier into the playoffs last year. But if Satu can take that step, I think they're right there to jumping into well into the top half of the league, maybe in 2023.
Well, it's also going to be interesting how they use her, especially with Tierra McCallum there. Just like, so Sobley projects to be a little bit more perimeter focused than I think maybe she has been in the past, because their centers in the past have been a little bit like Harrison has been a little bit more playing from the outside. I think they brought in Awa Kuir to kind of be a center like that, that could play on the outside. But now with McCallum patrolling the middle, A, that takes off some defensive burden if McCallum can do that, which I'm a little dubious of, but if, and also on the offensive end, same thing. I'm a little dubious of McCallum's skills offensively, but if she is the good McCallum that we saw in Indiana at times, well, it's a really big offensive presence down low that opens a lot of things up for Sobley, for Arike, for Leisha Gray, for all these players that can attack off the bounce. And hopefully Sobley can shoot, because that has not been something that she's been able to do in the WNBA. I would like to chalk that up to injuries, but the shot hasn't quite been there. You know, I'm going to look it up. So 32% from three last year, 19% in 2020, which I'm just going to flat out ignore. But
that was the bubble season. We can toss that out the window.
No, that's fine. And her rookie year, like we can just shoot that to the side. You know, so where is she in terms of the shooting? Can she finish with a big down low, or does she need to get all the way to the rim? Because McCallum's going to bring someone to the rim. There's going to be someone at the rim. Depends on what they can do about that, and she can get those little dump offs to McCallum down low. So I think Sobley really changes things if she's what we think she is. And hopefully she's at, oh God, I'm so tired of saying, hopefully she's healthy. But that's what I got on Dallas. Do you have general thoughts on the Wings?
Yeah. Well, you brought up Tierra McCallum. I feel like she's an interesting player to me because I feel like the narrative around her is always filled with like ifs and if right. this and if that, but I'm not sure if I understand the ifs, because to me, I feel like Tierra McCallum is one of the players who we kind of should just accept that we know what she is, and right. she's not really like average at very many things. She's either like exceptional at things or just mm-hmm. terrible at them. Like obviously she's not a shooter, and I don't think she's ever going to be a shooter. She's like an exceptional, you know, paint presence, rebounder, etc., and that's, she's always going to bring that because she's 6'7", and just that's what she is, that's what you get. And if you're okay with bringing someone to the rim, like you said, then you make that sacrifice and you get a lot of positives out of Tierra McCallum too. I think she can contribute in a lot of valuable ways, but you have to be okay with, you know, what you're not going to get, because what you're not going to get is you never are going to get it.
Yeah. You know, she ain't stepping back, folks.
Right.
Ever. That's not happening. And I think
you talk about that with a lot of players, like, oh, maybe they can expand their range at some point, you know, like that's not going to happen. So just accept it.
Yeah. No, as long as she can finish around the rim, I think it's fine. Cause I think Arike is really good at that dump off, like, flying into the lane, paint touch, dump off to the center in the dunker spot. Like that's what Arike can do. Also, just for the record, both Satu and Tierra will not be with the Wings to start the season. So we're going to have to wait a little bit until the Turkish season is done to see both of them in action, but just want to get that out there. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that's a very good point on McCown. Like, we don't have to expect her to change. She's going to be what she is. Just want her to be a little bit more efficient at the things that she is. And I want her, I do want to see a little bit more activity defensively. You know, she's not going to be someone that you can switch. You're going to have to play drop, but I think this roster kind of works with the center that plays drop, as long as she's really, really protecting the rim, which has been an up and down process in Indiana, at least. But in Indiana, also less perimeter guard talent for the most part in her tenure there.
Yeah. Well, you said more efficient. I would add more consistent.
Yeah, I guess consistent. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if she can, she has protected the rim at times and she has finished at the rim at times. And there's been times when she just flat out didn't. And if she can consistently do those two things, then you're fine. That's what you need out of her.
I agree. Do you have any other players on your list?
Yeah, I got one more. I'm going to scroll my notes here. I got Jess Shepherd from the Minnesota Lynx.
Fascinating. Tell me why. Shepherd
is intriguing and fascinating to me because, well, first off, the Lynx cut like their whole roster. So she's one of like three players that they have left. In all seriousness, you know, without Nafisa Collier, I think she's going to be relied upon more. She's one of the best passing bigs in the league. And, you know, due to injuries and other things, we haven't really seen necessarily her full potential yet, I think. And I think, you know, playing with, especially probably, I would assume, getting more minutes, more volume, at least while Collier is out, playing with players like Kayla McBride, players like Ariel Powers. I think that, you know, and whoever else the Lynx have left, I think, you know, maybe some high lows with Syl, I think could really fit with the Lynx. And losing Collier is a big deal. So I'm not sure what to expect out of the Lynx, you know, but I think if the Lynx, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but if the Lynx end up being still hovering around like that 3-4-5, you know, even without Collier for long stretches, and we look back and think like, wow, how did they do that? The answer is going to be because Jess Shepherd stepped up. I think they will need her to step up in order to maintain any semblance of the level of play that we've seen from them the last few years.
Well, and again, please stay healthy, Jess Shepherd. I think the Lynx are going to be there. I'm just like kind of over like saying like, oh, this is the year. They don't have enough. It's like they have Reeves. They have Fowles. Like, it'll be fun. They will figure out a way to at least remain in that middle of the pack group. Jess Shepherd, to me, though, I am a little worried about the weight that's going to be on her shoulders. You know, it's a player who she played 6 games in 2019, 22 games last year. And she did not, you know, I'm just not sure how much she can scale up, because we're talking about her scaling up to being, you know, I don't know if it's a starter. Let me see what I have on their depth chart, but like at least in game one, believe she is the starting power forward, unless they're starting Achanwa and Fowles.
No, I think they only have 5 players for game one, right? It feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. So their injury report, Collier, obviously not with the team because she's pregnant. Congratulations on the piece of Collier. That's awesome. But Demiris Dantas out with the foot. Kayla McBride still in Turkey. Angel McCautry is not with the team. I think that's probably a typo. I think she's with, I mean, I saw her play the other day in the preseason. Right. But you know, she's resting with the right knee essentially. So in this first game, Jess Shepherd is the starting power forward.
How many players do they actually have for this first game? How many bodies?
Well, it depends. They may sign people. They're eligible for hardship, but they have Odyssey Sims, Ariel Powers, Sylvia Fowles, Rachel Banham. So that's 4. Carlton. That's 5. Shepherd, that's 6, and Achanwa. Achanwa's on the injury report. Yeah, Achanwa, that's 7. Yeah. So we got 7 players.
7.
Yes.
Mm. So we're all playing minutes.
That is more than the Mystics had to play the Sun on national TV with six players last year.
That's true.
It was really, really funny. The layup line was very funny. Sad, but funny.
It's like those rec leagues or college intramurals, and like everyone's like, oh, everyone has night class on the same night. Like, oh, can we get like some random person to sub?
Yeah. Pick up anybody. That's when I got into our frat games because everyone was too hungover. Man, Minnesota is going to be, I just think they're going to find a way to get to the playoffs. I just think it's going to happen.
No question.
But I think you're right. I think Jeff Shepherd has to really scale up and figure out how to stay healthy, how to contribute on a consistent basis here. If not, they're going to have to go to the waiver wire and hope they pick up another Alicia Clarendon, who they cut unceremoniously just now to start the season, even though she was a huge part of what they were doing last year. I understand that she's hurt, but it's like, okay, this is weird now. We're at a point where it's like, this is all very weird and strange. And how much should we trust Cheryl Reeve, the GM?
It's a good question, because it's not always easy to separate, for her or for anyone else, James Wade, whoever else,
Tebow,
their contributions as a GM and as a coach, you know, and especially when it comes to, I mean, you can easily watch someone drop a game-winning play like the hammer from James Wade and be like, all right, that was James Wade, the coach, X's and O's. That's pretty easy. But when it comes to, you know, some player like Nafisa Collier getting drafted sixth and then wins rookie of the year, right? Crystal Dangerfield drafted, what was it, 14th?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard, at least for me, maybe I'm just like not smart, to look, okay, was that Cheryl Reeve, the GM, making a really good draft pick? Or was that Cheryl Reeve, the coach, being really good at player development and taking someone who was drafted low and developing them into a good player? And honestly, I don't know the answer. That's a cop-out, but I don't know which one is the answer on that. So I trust Cheryl Reeve overall for sure. And you're right that, like, I think the Lynx could walk into the playoffs in their sleep. I don't think they need anything from Jeff Shepherd to get to the playoffs. Because like we said, 8 out of 12, that's a lot of teams.
They need her to be a warm body and not a cold body.
Right. They need a human being. And she's a human being. They need a pulse. I do think they need something out of Jeff Shepherd in order to be, I don't know, top four, for example, which is where they've been in recent years. But so I trust Cheryl Reeve completely overall to get their team to that point. I just don't know which version, GM or coach, of Cheryl Reeve is the one who's really more responsible for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little column A, a little column B, right? Like, I think she finds players in the draft who she can develop. But also, like, Crystal Dangerfield, right? Like, that just turned out to be a really good pick. And now she's not on the team anymore. So, like, I don't know. I feel like we gave the Minnesota a lot of credit, but it's like for her winning the Rookie of the Year in the bubble. But it turns out it was just Crystal Dangerfield was doing what Crystal Dangerfield does. And actually, Cheryl Reeve doesn't really like that or trust it. So she moved on. So I'm with you. I trust Reeve, because look, it's hard to be even consistently middle of the pack with all of the injuries and issues that they face, especially since Maya Moore semi-retired, pseudo-retired. I'm not sure how we define it, but they've been pretty good, and they've had chances to contend for a title despite losing, you know, top five, top two player in WNBA history. Not a lot of teams can say that, even when you look across the sport. If you look at the NBA, it's very rare to see a team lose a player that's that good and lose a core as good as what they had and still be contending for titles in the years after that. So I think we should give a little bit more rope to Cheryl Reeve, the GM. But Cheryl Reeve, the coach, has certainly been doing an amazing job. So I don't know. Yeah, maybe Cheryl Reeve, the GM, is just hurting Cheryl Reeve, the coach, but Cheryl Reeve, the coach, is so good. I should just get over it. I can get over my other mistakes. Okay, so I have other players here. I'll just tell you. You tell me which road we want to go down. So choose your own adventure. Ezzie Magbigore, very interested in her. Kennedy Carter, fascinating, intriguing player in an intriguing situation. And Tiffany Hayes, those would be the last three on my list I haven't gotten to. Which one do we want to go down the path with?
All right, I have Ezzie Magbor on my fantasy team, so I am going to choose her as my adventure.
Okay, let's do it, because speaking of people that need to scale up, people that need to step up for this team's ultimate goal, Seattle's ultimate goal is to win a championship. They have Brianna Stewart, and they need to make her happy this year because she's...
Mercedes Russell is out right now, too.
That's the big thing. So Mercedes Russell's out for 3 to 5 weeks with a mysterious injury that we have not... I don't think we've gotten any clarification.
A non-basketball injury is all that I've seen.
Well, you know, I suffer non-basketball injuries getting out of the bed, so I don't really know what the hell that means. But with Ezzie, I don't know if she can scale up her offensive production. I don't know what she needs to do offensively, really, to be able to do what Mercedes does. I think she's developed nicely, hasn't really taken a huge step, but she's like 22, 23 now. She's very young still.
Super young.
So I think the defense has been there, but she needs to get better on that side. She needs to scale up her offense, and she needs to be able to fit with the players around her, namely Brianna Stewart, and figure out exactly what to do to support Stewie and make sure that, I mean, I hope she got a little bit bigger. I hope she got a little bit stronger, because she was a little thin coming into the league. And I think she's a little thin last year. So if she can get stronger, maybe she can turn into Natasha Howard in a way. I'm not sure if she's going to be that good, but if she can turn into that player that can be kind of a Depot-esque player, an all-defense candidate, while also providing enough offense to keep the team afloat, well, then here we have a championship contender. I think we have a championship contender. So that's why I'm intrigued by Ezzie, because I need her to be that good in order for this team to be where I think they're going to be.
Yeah, that's interesting, because, you know, there are those players in the league who just make a career out of being really good in not a lot of minutes.
Right.
And as soon as they're asked to take on a bigger role, whether it's just purely from a minutes perspective or whether it's from a usage perspective on offense, or whether it's, you know, defensively being asked to, go from maybe hiding on defense to guarding the other team's best player, guarding a lot more ball screens. Whatever the case is, there are some of those players who, as soon as their role changes, they just fall off a cliff. And her role is going to have to change, especially early on without Mercedes Russell. So they're going to need her to continue that production, like you said, in this different and especially bigger role.
Yeah. No, so we'll see. I mean, I think it'll be okay, right? Because they have Brianna Stewart and Sue Bird and Jewel Lloyd. So when you got those three, it makes a lot of things easier on the rest of your program slash franchise slash
pretty high floor with those three on the court.
Yeah, that's what I think they're going to be. I think they're going to be up there. We'll see if they can. I don't know. I mean, I think if they're healthy, they're going to. It's the old Boston Celtics thing. Like when those three have been healthy and starting, they've never lost a playoff series. Mm-hmm. We're getting into that territory. I think Kevin Pelton brought that up. It's like, yeah, when those three are healthy, they win all their playoff series. So if those three are healthy, I'm going to go with them being good enough to win every single playoff series they're in. So that's our intrigue, I think. Anything else on any players?
No, I think we covered it. We didn't cover it, actually. Well, we could talk for hours, but I think in terms of the time limit that we have, I think we covered it.
Yeah. Within we're actually going to be under the wire. We're going to get it under an hour, folks. Well, I don't know.
That?
We'll see. We're still at 52 minutes. We can come up with something for 8 minutes. You didn't watch Doctor Strange, did you?
Last night.
Okay, it came out yesterday, so that's fine. It was an awesome movie. Anybody, if you want to go watch it. And then we could also make more picks, but we will do that on Spread the Floor. So make sure you go over there. Do we want to do any like futures picks though? Like, have you had any futures stuff out?
Yeah, I kind of already mentioned a little bit, but I picked the Sun as my championship winner, and I've seen them as high as +400. I forget if that's FanDuel or DraftKings, one of those two. So I like that one as sort of a more of a favorite-y type of future. And then I already talked about being high on the Liberty. If you want a really long shot, don't put very much money on this one. If you want to put like a little bit on a long shot, I like the Liberty at +3,000.
Oh, wow.
As well.
What the Mystics had good odds the last time I checked. There's a plus 1500.
I think they're I feel like I've seen them at plus, you know what? I have the tabs open right now. I'm just gonna pull them up. I feel like I've seen them at +1800 or even +2000. They were +3000 on the day of the draft lottery, and that did not change. Oh, you're right. FanDuel has them at +1500. They keep moving. Wow. So I took them at +3000 because you know how sportsbooks are, WNBA. Yeah. They don't update right away. So as soon as I got the number one pick, it took like hours or even like a day for some of these books to update the odds. So I took them at +3000. FanDuel has them at +1500. Let's see. Where does DraftKings? DraftKings has the Mystics at +1800. All right. Yeah, that's still pretty good. Honestly, as long as if Clark comes back strong soon enough and Elena Deladon can stay healthy and between her load management and whatever, you know, play enough games to keep them afloat in the regular season, but also stay fresh enough for the playoffs. Yeah, definitely. I like +1800 still.
I like that a lot. I also took this morning, just on a lark, the Wings +200 to make the playoffs. I was like,
yeah, I saw that one on FanDuel. Yeah.
That was on FanDuel.
Is the only book that has those odds to make of teams to make the playoffs, so I like that too. Wings at +200.
Yeah, because like we were talking about when we were talking about Sobley, is like, I don't know, there's a lot of teams that could falter in front of them, and I think they're good as long as they're healthy and developing. So yeah. No, we didn't mention Veronica Burton. Shouts to Veronica Burton. Excited for you there. I think she's gonna get a lot of playing time.
Yeah. I hope she does well.
Yeah, I hope she does well too. Although I still think Nia Claudin, I would have taken her first. Back out at 55 minutes. Second
55 minutes. All right,
second
real quick to wrap up.
What's up?
To see if maybe we can get to an hour or not. Maybe I'll ramble. So we're the only reason we're hopping off in an hour is because we're about to go record the Spread the Floor show where we're going to make picks. Really quick, want to plug Spread the Floor because pick we posted on there earlier, Mystics -6.5. It was at one book. It was -7.5 at all the other books. I'm looking at it now. It's -9 on DraftKings.
Wow.
And let's see, on PointsBet, it's -9. Yep, so that's been moving. So if you followed Spread the Floor and got that pick in right away, you already got some good closing line value on that pick. So go follow it. We'll talk about it more on our next show we're about to record on the Spread the Floor YouTube channel, but we will be doing those all season long, so go follow it.
Hot take, this is not going to be my pick on Spread the Floor, but Indiana, +9? They're going to come out. They're going to come out firing. I don't know what they're going to be firing, but they will come out firing. They will be very excited because it's everyone's first WNBA game on the damn team.
True. It's a college team and they have no idea. They don't know what they don't know. You're right. Maybe I should middle it +9. I don't know.
I might take the +9, but also I think we should institute a rule that the Indiana Fever's record is actually their record against the spread. Let's not look at the win losses. That's not what's important. Good teams win, great teams cover. I think Indiana can cover a lot this year.
That is funny. You know, last year when they started out terribly and then in the middle of the season they finally won some games, when they were like 1-14 or whatever, they were also like 1-14 against the spread. Awful against the spread. I don't know what they finished up. I think that number definitely improved a lot, but yeah, you're right. Great teams cover.
I think they're going to be the garbage time queens of this season because they're all 20. They're all going to be running up and down the floor the entire game. I think they're going to be the garbage time queens. Calvin, do you have anything to plug before we head out?
No.
Other than Spread the Floor.
That's it.
All right. Then I'm also plugging Spread the Floor. So join us over there on the other YouTube channel. The link for that's going to be in the description for this video, so that you guys can easily go over there and check us out, because we're going to be doing hopefully daily videos throughout the WNBA season, bringing guys picks. But right here on the Her Hoop Stats podcast and the Her Hoop Stats podcast network, we'll be talking hoops the entire season. So happy opening day, and we will talk to all of y'all very soon.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.